I'm excited to at least be able to provide parents and staff members with a good amount of information that grounds them in what will be expected as we start the new school year. And of course, if you've had a chance to look at it, you know that we are planning to provide an option for parents to choose either a 100% remote learning environment from the start or in-person learning. We've given out our schedules of the times that kids will be in session, pre-K through 12th grade, with very little adjustment in what our normal school day is, say for the high school. Obviously, within the context of the day, things are going to be a little bit different. And the document that we put out today does not answer every single question or scenario that could come up. We are working on and have a pretty good list of frequently asked questions that we will release soon. And I have no doubt that both the plan document as well as the frequently asked question document will be updated quite often as new information comes out or we find that parents have specific questions or staff members do that we haven't yet answered. So it's a fluid thing, and it's I'm glad that we finally have the opportunity to put it out there because lots of folks have worked really, really hard on this, too many to name, but I'm proud of their efforts to get us to this point today.
You mentioned the high school ending earlier, scheduled for 1:45. Why is that?
That's how it worked out in our schedule to be able to we wanted to provide a schedule that allowed for a minimal amount of movement through the day. If you're familiar with our high school schedule, kids typically have 7 periods in a day. They move from one class to another every 50 minutes, and a lot of kids in the hallway at the same time passing. We knew that that was not the best way to be able to conduct classes in this environment, so we've lengthened the classes. We've gone with more of what people will think of as a block type of schedule, where kids only have a few classes each day, and they go every day, but they might have their first, third, and fifth hour on one day, and then their second, fourth, and sixth on the next. And every student will have an advisory period every day of the week. We normally have a 7-period day. We're actually going with 6 academic periods plus the advisory period, and afforded our, because of the change in the type of schedule, our staff has not had much professional development in the way of training for a block type schedule, and we're asking them to kind of flip a switch and do that. So providing them with a little bit more time at the end of the day to gear up for that and really improve upon it as time goes on, we felt was important. So it does get the kids out a little early, but it meets the requirements for what is expected in terms of clock hours in a day.
Based on surveys of parents in District 87, 11% said they wanted remote learning. 31% said they weren't sure yet. They have until August 4th to decide. What will remote learning look like? Will it be similar to what the district had done last year?
No, it will not. For those who choose a 100% remote learning environment to start the school year, we have worked for a number of years with a software company called Edmentum. It's well known in the education world, pre-K-12 education world anyway, where it's a curriculum that's aligned to the standards of the state of Illinois. They offer a curriculum that starts in kindergarten all the way through 12th grade, and it is more teacher-facilitated, some self-guided activities that kids will do. The coursework that's offered, while it doesn't offer every course that we might offer at the high school, it has the vast majority of those. And so we've put a link out there for parents to be able to take a look at that. But that will be the 100% remote learning environment curriculum that we use for those kids who choose that option to start the school year.
And these will be District 87 teachers that will be using it, or will it be Edmentum's own?
It will be our teachers. We will staff that. You can kind of think of it like a school within a school. So for those parents and kids that choose remote learning, this only affects kindergarten through 12. The pre-K program is not eligible for it. Those students and parents that choose it, it's kind of like that's a kindergarten through 12th grade school in the sense of how we staff it. So we'll take a look at how many first graders, second graders, and so on that are in there, and we'll staff according to the number of kids that are in all the various grade levels. And when it comes to the secondary level, content areas are not as important. So you, in other words, you need a certified teacher to be able to facilitate these classes and the lessons for kids, but they don't have to be content area experts. Now, obviously, there could come times where they might have to tap into the expertise of one of their colleagues, depending on the nature of the course and what challenges a child might be having within a course or what questions they may have. But by and large, they will be facilitators of the learning environment and be able to help kids on a day-to-day basis. The structure will be different. They will be on the time frame of the elementary school day. There will be expectations for attendance, for check-ins, and the accountability for remote learning, whether it's the parents and kids who choose to start the year this way, or if we were to fall back, let's say, in October to phase three and everybody has to go out, the expectations and accountability for kids will be much higher. In other words, we will continue learning activities that kids will be expected to do. If you think back to the spring, that really wasn't the case. When it happened, it was a crisis situation where kids were, wherever they were at, they couldn't be, they couldn't go any lower. So a kid who had a C in a class at the high school could do no worse than that once that March timeframe hit. That created a lot of challenges for our staff in terms of the motivation for learning, but that is no longer an issue. There will be much higher expectations on students and staff for remote learning.
The Illinois Federation of Teachers is now recommending that school districts stick with remote learning entirely for now. The group says that social distancing will be difficult to maintain in school. What hesitation or resistance, if any, did you encounter from the Bloomington Education Association on reopening school?
Our association has been at the table from the beginning of the planning process. I think that it's fair to say that we have not just BEA members, but all staff that's represented across the district has some concern, some level of concern, returning to a work environment where you have a number of people placed in the context of a building together when they haven't necessarily been doing that for some time, and you're in the middle of a pandemic. We certainly do have those concerns raised, but ours have been part of the planning all the way. They've had a great deal of input into this planning document that has come out today. Doesn't mean that we are free from concerns. We absolutely are not. People are concerned. And it's because we are not going to be able to guarantee every minute of every day that kids are going to be socially distanced to 6 feet. It's just not going to be feasible to do. So we do the best we can given our context. I can tell you that I can't speak for what is happening with the entire IFT or IEA or even a national organization that might be considering these issues, but we look at our local context. What is our positivity rate here in McLean County? What are the hospital bed usage rates at? Those sorts of things, I think, matter and should matter. And it's not to say it couldn't change. We couldn't see a spike here. Obviously, we've seen more cases in McLean County in the last week than we had in quite some time prior to moving to phase four. So, yeah, my staff, they definitely have some concerns, but they've been part of the process the entire way.
And some educators have expressed concern aside from potentially being at greater risk of a COVID-19 infection, but there's enforcement, making sure that kids, first of all, bring them to school, that they use them, they don't lose them, that they wear correctly, they don't play with it. I know educators have expressed concerns about having to police that. How do you help prepare teachers to keep this from becoming a distraction?
I don't pretend to have the 100% answer here. I think this is going to be something that we obviously are making a very high priority for the safety of everyone. And as you know, this has become any number of issues when it comes to face coverings in our country. And so what we need is for all of our parents, all of our staff members to be good role models with this. I think that'll go a long way to helping kids understand why it is important. We're going to explain that. We're looking at this as a safety issue and not as a discipline issue. So while I'm not naive, I understand that there could be some challenges with it. And you also have to take into account the age of kids and their ability to be able to have something covering their mouths and nose for any extended period of time. So I think that's going to be, no doubt, a work in progress. But we're going to need significant help from our parents to be good role models for that, because if we are constantly dealing with negative attention on that from the outside, that's not going to help us on the inside. And so I think the more that we are good role models on it, the better off all of us will be.
Do teachers have the same option as parents if they want to stick with remote learning? Are those the ones that are doing the remote learning, or how does that play out?
We will have an application process for any of our teachers to apply for those positions. I couldn't tell you today how many of those positions we will have, only because we don't know until we get the numbers of kids. That will determine the staffing levels. And from there, we will have an application and interview process to select those individuals. And it's just going to depend on how they align. I doubt that it's going to align perfectly. So, for example, if I know that I need 20 teachers who are going to be staffing the remote learning, and if I have 25 applicants, obviously I can only select 20 of those. So if it aligns perfectly, great, but I can't sit here and tell you today that that's going to be the case. But it will be an internal application process that teachers will be asked to apply for, and then we will consider and hire based on our need.
And what will happen if there was an infection or worst-case scenario, a breakout in a particular classroom or school?
Anytime that we have either a case or more than a case, we will be in close contact with our local health department, getting guidance from them. It just depends on the context of it, so I couldn't tell you in every single case how things would play out. It could mean that we have an individual who is self-isolating at home for a period of time. It could be that it's a classroom. It could be that it's a handful of individuals. All of that goes into how the health department does its contact tracing and their communications to determine who needs to be in this boat that has to self-isolate. It could mean that we'd have to close down a school. It could mean we'd have to close down the district for some period of time. But all of those decisions will be made in conjunction with the health experts in our community.
We've heard that remote learning, since it had to be thrown together hastily last year, left students months behind in their education. You've alluded to their grades were sort of held in place. They couldn't be lowered in that time. Given all these moving parts, how do these children get caught up on what they need to learn?
Well, I don't think it's fair to make an assumption that we're just going to simply magically take what some kids may have lost in March through the end of May and get them, ahead of the curve, so to speak, to get that back. So what we always look for is we want to help our kids from the point they are to the end of the school year grow 1 year in 1 year's time. If we can move beyond that, we certainly will. The challenge we've got now, Eric, quite frankly, is it's not even as if we're heading into a normal school year. So things that we might be able to do, we may not be able to do like we could have in the past, like provide a very rigorous and expansive summer school program. We just couldn't do that given the circumstances. So that was a lost opportunity to try to get, some kids who might need additional supports ahead of the curve, so to speak. But we'll take kids where they're at. We'll provide the best learning opportunities to help them grow. We will do some assessing of our kids to see where they're at and what those losses could have been, and take it from there. But I don't think it's fair to just assume that we're going to magically catch every kid up who may have lost a little bit at the close of last year.
How much more of an undertaking will it be to ensure that every square inch of each school and each bus gets cleaned and disinfected? I know that's part of the protocol for every night. Is that going to require additional staff, additional costs there?
Yes, for both. We are actually gearing up to hire some additional custodial staff, and I anticipate that those individuals will provide support to do all of that disinfecting each day after school to gear up for the next day. I couldn't tell you if, in terms of the transportation and bus company, that they are having to add additional staff for keeping the buses clean, but there are expectations of that, know that. But in our case, yes, it could mean more for staffing, for the custodial staff. It will definitely mean more for supplies, and as well as PPE. So yes, and we're tracking all those costs just so we can provide that kind of information to our public, to our legislators who we might advocate to for some additional support based on everything that we've been facing heading into this school year. Now, in some cases, we're kind of holding off on the hiring of some of those extra staff only out of caution in the event that we have a much larger number of parents who choose the remote learning option, or we're not able to start the year in person, because that scenario exists. It is out there. We're not talking about it much, of course, but depending on how things progress, there could be, the governor could scale us back to phase three. That looms, and we still have 4 weeks to go before the start of next school year. A lot can happen between now and then.
Yeah, I was going to ask then, as we are about 5 weeks away from the start of school year, what are you most worried about between now and August 24th?
I think I'm concerned about my staff and the anxiety that they are feeling heading into this year. I think a lot of attention has been placed on students and parents and families, and rightfully so, but I don't want to do that at the exclusion of our staff members, who, you know, I have a wide range of ages of staff members. I have some who have some underlying health conditions of their own, some who have extended family who have underlying health conditions of their own, which cause them a great deal of anxiety. And so I think more than anything, I'm concerned about the staff's mental well-being, as well as their physical well-being, as we get closer to the start of this school year. I think that's weighing heavily on their minds. There's many who are very anxious to get back to school. Don't get me wrong. I just think that this is a unique event that none of us have ever lived through.
So going back to the applicants for the teachers applying for these online learning positions, like you said, you may get 25 applicants for 20 positions. Is there another option for someone that doesn't get that is not comfortable in the classroom?
No, there's, we are a school district that our business, so to speak, is about teaching kids. And if I only have room for so many in a remote learning environment, then the other option is in-person learning. Now, that's not to say if somebody, for any reason, any medical condition that somebody has, those are always handled on a case-by-case basis, working with the Human Resource Department and looking at, information coming from a medical doctor, looking at a job description to see what accommodations might be needed, and if those are reasonable, then we can provide those. So that process doesn't change. It is entirely what we've always done. I think one of the things that I am concerned about is I've already had at least one that I'm aware of, someone who decided to retire, but their plan was to continue working. But for COVID-19. If this didn't happen, they would have continued. And I have no doubt that that's happening in other places. That concerns me, obviously, for not just that individual, but the experience that we lose. And that's sad when, you know, people are having to make life decisions based on, you know, the real concerns that they have about being around others and the very real fear of this virus.